on today's Run to the Top podcast.
I think in racing, there's always going to be pain and discomfort. I mean, that's just part of what it means to put yourself out there and compete. That's kind of why I like to race as much as I do. Like, I embrace that challenge of, like, how long can I last? Like, how long can you hold your hand to the fire? And what does that mean?
Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast from Runners Connect, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. Together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now here's your host, Stephanie K. Atwood.
Welcome. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, Boston Marathon qualifier, coach, and host for the Run to the Top podcast. The San Francisco Marathon is one of those bucket list races for most road runners. Running across the Golden Gate Bridge is truly magical. Circumnavigating the beautiful city by the bay with Fisherman's Wharf, Golden Gate Park, cable cars, and ocean all around is also extremely magical. For some folks, including Michael Wardian, 26.2 miles isn't quite enough. In July 2019, Michael won the San Francisco Double Marathon two times on the course for a total of 52.4 miles. This was after quite a few other races in 2019, including the World Marathon, seven marathons in 7 days on seven continents, and Michael won all of them. Michael's running career includes some crazy, funny records and much, much more. He is certainly unique in his goals and the running path he follows. Let's start with the SF Marathon course and seven marathons in 7 days in seven countries and see where it leads us. Welcome, Michael.
Hey, it's so nice to be on. Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, well, thanks for being here. What an exciting and unique story you have.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a crazy journey for sure, and looking forward to doing a lot more fun things in the future.
Yeah, well, that was the impression I got from the research I did on you, is that there's really nothing that will stop you from trying unique and pushing the limits kind of stuff.
Yeah, I know. It's definitely what drives me to wake up every day and, you know, get after it. And I love seeing what I'm capable of doing, and I hope inspiring people to do a little more than they think they can on their own ends.
Sounds good. So we always ask the first four questions, and those are: what is your current age? Where were you born? Where do you live now? And what is your favorite current race distance? That might be a hard one for you as far as a favorite.
Yeah, I guess we'll start with the easy ones and we can work towards the more difficult or challenging one. But I'm currently 45 years old. I was born in Morgantown, West Virginia, and I live in Arlington, Virginia, which is about 10 kilometers or 6 or 7 miles from Washington, D.C. And I'd say my favorite race distance, I had to only run one, I'd say it's probably the marathon, but I definitely find ultra marathons to be something that I'm really smitten by and driven to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know you've just covered all the distances from really short ones to really, really long ones. So we're going to get into that. You are pretty well known already by the running community, but give us a rundown of your transition from lacrosse, which is what you did as a youth, to running way, way, way back in the 1990s, I think.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, I grew up playing a sport called lacrosse, where you kind of run around with sticks and try to score goals, and it's a team sport. I loved it. I still enjoy watching it and every now and then throwing the ball around. And you know, someday I hope to maybe get back and play a little bit. And then I picked up running at Michigan State University. I played lacrosse there and picked up running kind of to stay fit when I was done playing lacrosse, and decided to run a marathon. So just kind of jumped in with both feet, and was lucky enough to have met a buddy of mine's mom, Vicky Voisin. So my friend Vince Voisin and I went over to have some dinner at their house one evening, and she was just finishing the Boston Marathon, and it was kind of the first time that I'd ever met a real person, you know, not like a Bill Rogers or something that you see on TV, but, you know, just a typical average marathon runner, which so many of us are. And it gave me hope that, like, wow, if Vince's mom can run a marathon, then and not just any marathon, but like I really wanted to do the Boston Marathon. And I had no idea at the time that the Boston Marathon was, you know, kind of a, if as a road runner, it's kind of one of those races that you build up to and you work toward.
Definitely.
But I just decided that was my goal and figured out, you know, sent away the envelope and stuff. This was kind of before you used to submit applications like in paper, and got back the pamphlet and said, you know, what's your qualifying race? And I didn't know that you had to qualify to run a marathon. So I just decided, okay, I saw what time you needed to run, and I was like, okay, I'll just run that time and set the goal to get into the marathon. And I ran the Marine Corps Marathon and qualified for Boston and figured, you know, I'd do that and be done with it. And that one decision was like a seminal point in my life and changed the trajectory of everything that's come after it. And it's amazing what, you know, a split second decision can do and where it can take you. And I can't express how excited I've been with, you know, the way things have worked out and the opportunities I've had and the chance to kind of explore my limits and then also, you know, be on this journey that I'm on.
Yeah. And discovering that you're good at something and that it gives you like tremendous feedback, you know, both physically, obviously you're competitive as well as you're athletic. You like the movement part of it, but also saying, oh my gosh, this is a gift. This is a talent that was given to me. And, you know, what do I do with it now? I love it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's one of those things where you know, everyone likes to get positive reinforcement. And if you are, if you are, you know, capable, and I didn't know if I would be or not, but it was one of those things where I was willing to put myself out there and try it and set a big audacious goal and then kind of go for it. And I've kind of followed that throughout the course of my life. And it's been something that has served me well. I mean, there's plenty of failures along the way and mistakes but it's just like anything. And I love running because it's very visceral and it's very real. There's no subjectivity to it. You know, your time is your time. And it seems like people can make it super complicated, but I think at the end of the day, it's pretty simple. If you put the time and work in and effort and you're willing to do it.
Yeah. And it's also very affordable. I know you mentioned this at some point in something I heard about from you, but it's definitely part of what got me started is that, you know, I could do it and I didn't really, I mean, initially I didn't even buy a new pair of shoes and, you know, so you just go out there and you start moving.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I was a very poor college kid and looking around at like what was available to me, like it was the most accessible and the easiest to do. And the greatest part about it is you don't have to go at a certain time or with anyone. You can just, you know, go when it works for you and when it's convenient. And it's really time and cost effective because an hour run, you can get a good workout. Whereas if you're cycling or something else, like it just takes longer. Or if you wanted to swim, you have to go when the pool is open. And I don't know, like it's just there's a very low barrier to entry. And I love that about it.
Yeah. Now this was in what, the mid 1990s that you ran Boston when it was certainly.
Yeah. My first Boston Marathon, I think was 1997.
Okay. So we're going to cover up through 2018 fairly quickly because I do want to get into some detail on the San Francisco Marathon and this World Marathon Championship. So kind of, you know, relatively quickly say some of the high points of what, 20 years or whatever. Oh, yeah. 20 years worth of running.
Yeah. I mean, I guess there's been quite a few. I mean, some of the things that people find interesting are, I, you know, eventually qualified for Boston, decided, you know, I wanted to see where I could take that, continued to drop my marathon time from 3:06 to sub 3 hours to all the way down to, in 2011, I ran 2:17:49 for a personal best qualifying for my third Olympic trials, represent the U.S. in, world championships in the 50 kilometers, 100 kilometer distances, bringing home medals in both those events, helping the U.S. team win a gold medal, was like an 8-time member of the 100K world team, won multiple big city marathons, such as like the National Marathon here in Washington, D.C., won the San Francisco Marathon, actually, which was cool. And to be one of the first people, I think, to win both the San Francisco Marathon and the Ultra is pretty unique. Won a pretty prestigious race called the JFK 50 miler, which was my first 50 miler. So I did that very quickly in like my first year of running the Boston Marathon. I also ran the JFK 50 mile, and then to come back years later and to win that event was really special. Run multiple, like most of the hardest ultra marathons in the world, like Ultra Trail du Mont Blanc, Hard Rock, Leadville, Western States, Ultra Trail Australia, Tarawara 100K. Yeah, so I've run on all seven continents. I won the North Pole Marathon, set Guinness World Records for fastest marathon pushing kids in a jog stroller, as Spider-Man, as Elvis. So yeah, it's been a pretty crazy career. And then 2019 has actually probably been one of my best years. So like just, you know, to have all those things in the past and then, you know, to still be relevant and competing at the highest level is pretty incredible.
Yeah, totally cool. And we're going to start with the San Francisco Marathon, and then we'll go back at least in time to the World Marathon. But talk about the San Francisco Marathon in a lot of detail. I know a lot of our listeners would be interested in running the San Francisco Marathon as part of their bucket list. You know, it's just such an iconic race and such a beautiful race. And for you, of course, one time on the course wasn't enough. You had to run it two times in a row. Plus, I know you've run it other times as well and placed very well and even won it, I guess, at least one year. Yep. But talk about this San Francisco Marathon, July 2019, and give us a lot of details.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's you know, I have run the San Francisco Marathon, and I think it's the BioFreeze San Francisco Marathon. Quite a few times. And I think 2019 was special because I'd always seen the people, I think it's the fifth year that they've had the ultra marathon option. And so that starts, it usually starts around midnight, the night of the marathon. So you start at midnight, you run, and then you have to get back on the start line by, I think, 5:30 to run the San Francisco Marathon. Okay. So it's pretty, and you run mostly the same course as the marathon. The only part that's different is you're not allowed to run across the Golden Gate Bridge at night. And so they have like a comparable section that you run on this highway that, that makes up that distance, but you run, it's pretty cool. You start down at the ferry building right on the Embarcadero. You run from there counterclockwise. So you run the course backwards. So you get to go, you know, by the stadium, where the Giants play, and then you run up through like the various hills that are in San Francisco. You run like the Haight-Ashbury area down those streets over to Golden Gate Park, do a big circle around Golden Gate Park, go out the street near the ocean, and then
the Great Highway.
Yeah, exactly. And then you come back through the park a little bit, end up back down on the Embarcadero, and then you're kind of done. And so it's pretty amazing because you get to see the city in a whole different time of day. And so there's, you know, different elements of the culture that are out. You know, you see people out at the bars having a good time, finishing dinner. And then as it gets later into the night, you know, you kind of see it get a little bit rowdier, and then and then you're kind of done, and then you line up again, and you get, you know, the first light coming up, which is pretty spectacular. So you have the ferry building, you're running out towards the Golden Gate Bridge. You get to the Golden Gate Bridge around 6 or 7 miles, and you're kind of crossing it at sunup. And as everyone knows, it's, you know, ever seen pictures of San Francisco, it's a pretty iconic site. And you cross over that, make a little loop on the far side, run back, and then you head into Golden Gate Park. You get greeted by, they have a half marathon and a second half marathon. So you get to run with the first half marathon peepers for the first section, and then you run into the second half marathon people on the second section, which is, it's really cool to kind of have that energy from people that are just starting.
I bet.
And then, you know, it's kind of a mass of humanity moving down the various streets, and a lot of people come out and support the race in various ways. So, you know, at all the major intersections, you have people that are out there supporting, yelling, screaming for you. And then you kind of end up back down at the ferry terminal for the finish. And it's, for me, like one of my favorite races. It's definitely, you know, a tough race as far as like there's some legit hills because it is San Francisco. But I feel like if you're pretty fit and you're willing to, you know, go pretty hard, you can run a nice time there. And it's one of my favorite events of the summer. And it's a great time of year because a lot of places are really hot. And I think somebody said, you know, my coldest winter I ever had was a summer in San Francisco. So it's nice weather, and you get different pockets of weather depending on where you are on the course. And so that's a kind of a cool aspect to it also.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing so many details on that. And you came in first. What was your combined time for the two marathons?
I think it was around 6 hours and 12 minutes. I think I ran the first marathon in 3:04. And then I actually, I suffered an injury at mile 23. I, in the dark, we kind of got headed in the wrong direction because you kind of follow your own. You have an app on your phone to try to stay on course, and we got a little off course.
Yeah.
I took a sharp turn a little too quick, and I pulled my abductor, so I had some excruciating pain to finish out the first marathon. And I thought, wow, I don't know how I'm going to be able to do this second marathon. But sitting in bed, it was hurting as much as standing up. So I was like, well, I'll just run until I can't suffer anymore. And I was fortunate to be able to kind of stick it out and pull off the win. But I think I ran the second marathon a little bit slower in like 3:08, which I'd like to go back. And I definitely think I could break 3 hours in both and run, you know, a really solid time. So that'll be something that hopefully I can do in the future.
Yeah, well, sounds good. And congratulations on that win. It's a very impressive. And thanks for sharing, you know, so many of the details. Like I said, it's just such a great race. I have done it myself, and not a double, but beautiful, beautiful place to run. So thanks for sharing that. And 7 marathons in 7 days on 7 continents in 2019 also. You had a few months break between those two major races, but talk about this World Marathon Championship. And you won all of your races, right?
Yeah, so it's called the World Marathon Challenge, and it's 7 marathons, 7 days on 7 continents. This year, I've won it twice, which is pretty crazy. So I won it in 2017 and also 2019. The courses were a little different. I averaged around 2 hours and 54 minutes for all 7 of the marathons, including Antarctica. So the race starts and everyone kind of got together. There was about 50 competitors. We all arrived in Cape Town, South Africa. And then we flew from Cape Town, South Africa to Antarctica, and we ran a marathon in Antarctica, and then about 6 hours later we ran a marathon in Cape Town. And it was a pretty incredible year this year. It was really too warm in Antarctica, so it was around 32 degrees, so that meant that the snow and everything got really chunked up.
Ooh, slush.
Yeah, it turned into slush. And was just really slow, and then there was a pretty substantial headwind, so that made for a little bit slower going. And then the next marathon is, you know, I don't know, maybe less than 10 hours later, you have like a 6-hour flight back. And we started running that, and it was around 90 degrees Fahrenheit. So you have your body has a lot of trouble being like, wow, I was just really cold, and now I have to deal with extreme heat and humidity. And so that made for a big challenge. And then from there, we flew to Perth, Australia, a 22-hour flight. And we ran that race starting around midnight Perth time and finished. We were back on the plane by 8:00 in the morning Australian time and flew from there to Dubai, where we ran a marathon. Again, another really hot race. Perth was super hot also. And then from Dubai, we went to Madrid and ran on a Formula One track, which was awesome. And it was actually pretty chilly in Madrid. in February. So this is also quite hilly. So the Formula One track, I don't know if anyone's ever run on one before. They look like they're flat, but it's actually, I think I ended up with around 2,000 feet of elevation gain over the course of the marathon. So that was surprising. But and then from there, we had a really long flight down to Santiago, Chile, where we ran another marathon. And then we finished the World Marathon Challenge in Miami, which was pretty incredible because my family and a bunch of friends were able to come to the finish line. And we had a big celebration. And yeah, I was able to win all seven of the marathons in an average time again of 2:54. And then I set a Guinness World Record for, I added three marathons to the back of those seven marathons. I ran those races here in Washington, D.C. So I flew home, ran a marathon that night, and then ran, you know, two more marathons the next 2 days. Each of those was faster than any of the races I did on the seven marathons. So I think my first marathon was 2:50. My second marathon was 2:45. And I finished 10 marathons in 10 days with a 2:40 marathon.
Wow. So that was a world record, the 10 marathons, 10 days, and the seven marathons in 7 days on seven continents with the world
marathon,
not championship, world.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The World Marathon Challenge, that also was a record, right, time-wise?
No, actually, I ran faster in 2017. So I averaged 2 hours and 45 minutes in 2017. And that was just...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was hoping to break that time too, but the courses tended to be a little bit trickier the second time, or at least in my opinion, I thought so.
Okay, and they're not always the same then? They're a little bit different?
Yeah, so the courses change based on where the itinerary is. I think they may end up being similar to the ones we did in 2019, just because they like the locations and they're pretty scenic.
Right.
So it's still getting dialed in, but yeah, so the event record is still from 2017.
Okay. Now, what about sleep? I read an interview by Mario Fraioli about you, and both in on the marathon challenge as well as in general, sleep is something you seem to be able to elude.
Yeah, it's weird. I was hoping, I was just looking at my Polar to see like, oh, maybe I could tell you how much I slept last night, but it says, why is there no sleep data? You need at least 4 hours to get data. So I've been trying to work on that. That's something that, you know, I know is healthy and something that you should take seriously. And so that's something that I feel like all of us have things that we need to work on. And for me, that's sleeping. But yeah, it's a very nice skill to have, to be able to function on very little sleep and to function at a high level and to recover really quickly. So like, those are two things that, you know, I've been able to hone and use to my advantage when I need to. And I hope that, you know, it's something where, you know, I don't worry about if I get as much as what people say you need. It's like, I do as much as I can. And if I'm tired, I try to, you know, account for that. But for the most part, I'm ready to go.
Now, have you heard anything about long-term implications of limited sleep? Because it does sound like you really can get by with such a small amount of sleep. You know, what is any insight into the long-term implications of that?
I feel like it's like one of those things, kind of like you can find studies to support whatever you want to believe, and kind of like, oh, chocolate's bad for you. No, chocolate's good for you. Or, but it's got to be 85% cacao, and like red wine's good for you, but only if you drink, you know, less than two glasses. Yeah. And so like, I don't know. I mean, I think we all have to be like an experiment of one. And I've heard the same thing about running, right? Like, like what's going to happen to your knees, like with the amount that you run.
Yeah.
And so I'm hopeful that I'm trying to improve my amount of sleep, but I feel like there's so many other long-term things that could happen that it's one of those things where I'm doing the best I can. And if
And you're an experiment of one. You're an experiment of one.
I don't know. Maybe we can have this, whatever it'll be in 20 years, and you can see how it turned out.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're invited back, so maybe we'll have to confirm that date a little bit later.
Okay, cool.
Okay, so actually, a couple of questions here. In terms of running, you run a lot of miles, and I know it varies from week to week, but you did have a period of time when you were injured, and you had stress fractures several and hernias at the same time, I think. Can you talk about that and really how overall, in the 20-something years you've been running, you've had limited injuries, but you had severe injuries during that one period of time. So talk about that, injuries in general and specific injuries that you dealt with and how you recovered.
Yeah, that's a great question. And yeah, it's something that I've been fortunate to kind of not have a lot of injuries. And then if I ever have like niggles, like the San Francisco Marathon, like that abductor, like pull, like it turned all black and blue, and it was really, it looked really terrible. And, but it didn't really keep me from running for very long. I had to take like basically just a week easy. And during that time I was able to like cross train and lift and, you know, can kind of work on my strength training. So it was actually a nice break. Based already in 2019, I've raced over 1300 miles and, you know, 38 different events. So if there was a time that, you know, a little break was needed, that was probably it. So I kind of looked at it as an opportunity to focus on other things. And I think that's what I did. Mm-hmm. When you're referencing in 2012, I had five stress fractures of my pelvis and five hernias simultaneously.
Yikes.
Yeah, it was and I was in pain for most of 2012, actually, you know, kind of running through it, still running, you know, over 100 miles a week and competing all around the world and working full time. And we have two boys that are now 13 and 10. So our youngest was having epileptic seizures at the time. And so we were just not sleeping, even less than I sleep now. So like basically not sleeping at all. And it was one of those things where, you know, something had to give. And eventually my body found a way to stop me from doing what I was doing. And it was fine. I just looked at it like, okay, I'm just going to be the best possible person at rehab. And that's what I did. I, you know, took up cycling with a vengeance and started aqua jogging and would, you know, spend anywhere up to 4 hours in the pool getting after it, and, you know, running around the deep end of the pool, and made some stress fracture friends. And, and then started running on the Ultra G, did some, you know, physical therapy, and came back 4 months later and ran. I just wanted to run sub 6 minute pace at a half marathon in Miami and did that. And the next week ran like 1:14 for a half marathon, and then just got really back into my routine of racing and training. And I think it was a gift, actually, because it showed me like, even if you do get hurt, if you're determined and set big goals and want to come back from them and work hard, that you can, and that it shows. And I was also, you know, in my late 30s at the time. And as we said, like I'm 45 now and have been healthy since then. And I want to show people like, yeah, you don't have to give up on your dreams. And if you have a setback, like there are ways to come back from it, and it's possible. And so like, don't give up. And I think one of the great things that I learned from that too, is you got to be your own advocate. You know, you got to try to figure out what's going on. And once you know, like ask questions like, okay, like, yeah, I can't run, but what can I do? Like, okay, can I hike? Can I swim? Can I row? Like, because I still want to have that feeling. I think so many of us as runners, we are driven and determined, and we want to keep maintain our fitness. And like, there's lots of different ways to do that. You know, running is one way to do that, and it's probably my preferred way to do that. But there are other things that you can do, and, you know, be that, you know, getting a elliptigo or running on a, you know, Ultra G treadmill, or even just going for hikes. Like I did so many hikes and really focused on time with the family, and, you know, took advantage of things that, you know, maybe I didn't prioritize as much. And so like, those are, I think like you can look at it one of two ways. You can look at it as, oh man, for me, or you can look at it like, oh wow, this is cool. This is an opportunity to kind of learn a new skill and to do something different. And I'll be able to go back even more focused. And it also gives you a chance to kind of separate yourself from your running and say, like, is this something that, because sometimes you just get caught up in what you're doing and you don't say, like, do I really want to do totally. This? And I came back with even more love for the sport than I right. had before, and more respect for my body, and like being really cognizant yeah. now of if something seems off. Like, I know if I take, you know, before the injuries, if I didn't hit a certain, you know, predetermined mileage, even if I wasn't really feeling it, I would feel like I was disappointing myself and letting myself down. And now I have a different perspective, whereas like maybe there's a reason why, you know, it didn't go the way you wanted, and that's okay. And, you know, I want to be in this for the long term and be doing this, you know, forever. And so, like, if you look at it in that timeline rather than, oh, I have to make yeah. it for this next race, it kind of puts things in perspective.
I like that. You also talked about spending time with your family, and I find it interesting that both you in this article that I read about you and also Dean Karnazes, who I interviewed recently, both talked about how much travel is involved in your profession and how you include your family as much as you can in these things. So can you elaborate on this, both how important the family part is and how you include your family in a profession that takes you all over the world?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of my favorite byproducts of being a professional athlete, and in particular, like having these amazing opportunities. Like, our kids have already been, I think, to 21 countries as 13 and 10-year-olds, and they have friends, mm-hmm. you know, kind of all over the world that they've met and, you know, had different experiences. But I think there's something really powerful about travel. It really rips down preconceived notions of places and people and cultures. And it shows me, and in turn, I know our kids have seen this, like, they just have a very easy personality. Like, they're not fazed by things, you know, they know that planes don't show up on time yeah. and the gates aren't ready and stuff gets lost and food looks different and still can taste great, or there's, you know, weird fruits and veggies and like animals right. like we were just in Oregon and we were in a place called Cannon Beach and it's overrun with bunnies from a trailer park that was just accepting people's extra pets were when they would die or didn't want them anymore. Oh. And you know, 40 years later, uh-huh. now there's these bunnies that run around wild and they know that they're chickens that got out during yeah. a storm in Kauai and run around the island. And there's different trains and toilet seats and all these kinds of things. Like, there's so many different right. ways to do things. And I think it's great for them to know that. And, you know, they're starting to have their own ideas of where they want to go and travel. And if I can facilitate that through yeah. events, like I would love to do that. And I love to bring them because it's nice to have them there. And it's even cool, like, for them to, I think it's great for them to see that just because you're a parent, you don't have to give up on your dreams. And I hope that, like, people that, it seems like a lot of people that follow us, what we're doing on different social media platforms, like, it really resonates with people, and I hope it does, because I want to show people, like, I know so many people that once they have kids, they limit where they're willing to go and what they're willing to do. And I think if you mm-hmm. expose your kids to these experiences, you'll be surprised at how resilient they are.
Yeah. Now, there is a cost factor there. I know, you know, traveling with the whole family can be pretty expensive, but it's also the kind of thing that most people do take some type of a vacation so they can look for the area that they want to travel to and then look for the race and, you know, kind of put it together that way so that it is, in fact, affordable.
Right. Well, and I'm lucky that, you know, that's part of my job. So mm-hmm, it definitely makes that, you know, a little bit more manageable. But yeah, it's definitely a bigger expense going from two tickets or one ticket to four or five or however many people you're bringing.
Indeed.
So, mm-hmm. But a lot of the things are, like, cost neutral, right? So, like, rental car, right. You know, you can get, like, the same hotel room. So it's more like there's certain things that cost more, but then, and we actually have friends that, you know, they were so clever, they've determined that it would actually be cheaper to spend the summer in Guatemala than it would to be where they live in Arlington. So like, even with the tickets and the rental and everything, you know, just based on cost of living is so much less. So there are, there are advantages to it, and there are ways to do it.
Is there that kids like your age kids will remember this stuff for the rest of their lives? You know, this is stuff that will stick with them and impact the way they live the rest of their lives, in fact, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that's amazing. What's interesting is we've been doing it since they were toddlers, you know, and even smaller. So like, I think, you know, 2 weeks old, we had Pierce at a race, and like, he's not going to remember that, but like all those experiences like build up. And so like, that's made him into such a great traveler. And Grant also, like, they've been doing it so long, it doesn't faze them, you know, like to wake up out of a dead sleep and be like, grab your bags, we got to get off the plane, you know? So, when people are like, oh, I don't know if I want to take the kids because they're not going to remember it, you'll be surprised what they'll remember and what they don't. Like, and it's one of those things where you got to still keep living your life too. And I think that shows them that they're important, but you know, there are other things out there.
Moving on to another subject, pain and fatigue. These are two things that you have dealt with a lot and deal with a lot. Ultra runners deal with both of those so much. So talk about how you manage both of those things.
Yeah, I mean, I think those things are both really important. I think there's different types of pain. I think anyone that's run knows that there's good pain and bad pain. And it's one of the things as an athlete, you have to kind of be able to decipher, is this helpful? Like, is this just fatigue? Am I just tired? Or is this something serious? And that's a skill of like just being in tune with your body and really knowing what it means. Like anyone that's training for running, and especially longer distances, marathons and ultra marathons, there's going to be fatigue. I mean, that just goes with the territory. But if you're continually not feeling like you want to do it, or like you're having to cut workouts short or run short, like you should definitely look at like, hey, maybe I need a little bit of a break and a reset. And so that's a hard thing to do, because like, you have to decide like, hey, am I just being, you know, a little bit lazy, or is this something real? And sometimes it can help to have somebody, you know, external. Like I do some coaching, you know, I have like probably eight or nine people that I work with, and everyone's really driven. And so sometimes it's hard to get them to be like, hey, maybe this is, you know, a week that we should, you know, back it off a little bit. And so having that, or having a good sense of like, I don't have a coach, but I have a good sense of like, especially since the injury, like, hey, this is, it's okay. I don't need to do as much as I thought I did, or wow, I feel great. Maybe I want to go a little bit further than I had scheduled. And so that's kind of a nice thing to be really in tune with where you are and what you want to do.
So with training, do you back off if you have pain? And of course, with racing, then do you have some kind of mental place where you go? Or, you know, how do you actually differentiate between the racing part of it and the training part of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think in racing, there's always going to be pain and discomfort. I mean, that's just part of what it means to put yourself out there and compete. And so I look forward to that. That's kind of why I like to race as much as I do. Like I embrace that challenge of like, how long can I last? Like how long can you hold your hand to the fire? And what does that mean? And a lot of times, like you'll be surprised. You'll be like, oh, I can't hold this, you know, 10 more seconds, or oh, that guy's surging. Like there's no way. And then all of a sudden, or oh, I got to get to the top of this hill or this climb, or I just have two more miles that if I can just hold this pace, and there's no way, how can I do that? And then you have a breakthrough and you're like, wow, that feels easy now. And so that's something that just comes with experience. And I remember the first time, you know, I had a really rough patch, and, you know, they call it like, oh, you know, you hit the wall or whatever. And
right.
It's funny. There's different, especially if you're doing, you know, a 50 mile or 100 mile, or, you know, I did a last year at this time, I set the, what's known as an fastest known time on the CNO Canal, running 184 miles in 36 hours. And I broke a record from like the 70s or 80s or something, like by only 12 minutes over like that amount of time. And like at the end, I was really pushing and I've never gone that deep before. And I didn't think it was even possible. And, you know, I'm running like sub 7 minute miles at the end of 184 miles. And you're like, there's no way that that's possible. But yeah. you find the strength. And like, I think that that's what's so cool about these endurance events is like, you can feel like I can't take another step. And then 10 minutes later, you're like, oh, I can't run anything under 7 minute pace or 6:30. Or so you look at that and you say like, oh, that's not even possible. But it is completely possible if you're willing to kind of give yourself the freedom to explore what it looks like.
So I'm going to ask you a question that's a more general for us mortal runners. Would you seem a little beyond that to me? give us maybe a couple of pointers for when we're feeling defeated, or when, you know, we've had a really difficult, hard training run or stressful race, and we just need to, you know, stick with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, there's a couple tricks or hacks, like, you know, is the term now, but like, I think knowing what your why is really good. Like, why is it important to you? Like, why are you doing this? If it's because you want to impress somebody on the internet or you don't have a good reason, it's going to be harder. So it may be, you know, you want to, for me, it was like, I wanted to qualify for Boston. You know, now it's like, you know, I have different goals. You know, I want to, you know, set personal best or world records or whatever, but like, know why you're doing it. And then it needs to be something that's real, and then write it down and then put it where you can see it. So I think those like, just like those things are seem super simple, but are really, really powerful. Every time you, like, if you just put it on the corner of your monitor on a little post-it note and say like, qualify for the Olympic trials, or run a 10K, or, you know, run every day for 2 weeks, or whatever it might be, or cycle to work, you know, like, know what it is, and then where you want to do it, and then how are you going to measure it? Like, how do you define success? Because if you just say, I want to get faster, that's not good. What you should do is say, I want to run a 36-minute 10K. And okay, this is how I'm going to get there. So like, make it defined, make it measurable, and then make a plan to figure out how you want to get there.
And write it down. You're saying that really helps too. I guess it's just one more way of reinforcing it for, you know, mind, body, spirit, all of that stuff, is to have it in writing somewhere where you're looking at it.
Well, and also it makes it concrete. Like, you've set an intention, and if you're doing stuff that isn't following that, then you need to write something else down, because then you're not being honest with yourself.
Yeah, well, that's good advice. Gosh, I've got all these questions, and we're kind of getting toward the end of our time. Yeah. But you have a day job as well as, you know, you do all of this running and all over the world. So how describe your day job briefly, and how you combine the logistics of making all these things work.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I do international shipping. I'm an international ship broker representing U.S. and foreign flag ocean-going cargo vessels carrying primarily humanitarian food aid program food from the United States to places all over the world, places that you guys have probably heard of and seen on television, like Ethiopia, Somalia, South Sudan, Rwanda, Pakistan, Central South America. And it's a fantastic occupation. It's really incredible to get to deal with people, you know, all over the world, in Singapore and Denmark and all over the Mideast, and then of course all over the US. And I've been doing it since 1996 also, so kind of on the same trajectory mm-hmm. with my running. And everyone has seen me go from, you know, just wanting to qualify for the Boston Marathon to, you know, qualifying for my first local running team to competing for the U.S. to, you know, being now a sponsored professional athlete. And I've had a lot of people on that journey with me, and it's cool to kind of get to bring people that would never care about or know about running into the sport, and then also sharing running with people through that medium, and then also sharing shipping with people and running. Like, they don't really know, like, oh, how do my shoes actually get to me? Where do the clothes get manufactured? And so, like, to be able to marry those things. And I think the way that I do it is, you know, I try to, you know, let people know what I'm up to. And you'd be surprised how many people care about what you're doing if you're willing to put it out there. And then I you know, try to incorporate both things together. So, like, if I'm, you know, getting ready for a race, you know, I'll be connected and working on things. And then if it's a super long event, you know, I may have to have somebody in the office help me out. So I'm lucky. I have a good partner, Keith Powell, who we have the business together now. It's just the two of us, and we're able to kind of make it work.
Nice. And technology, I would think, would also help. I know I read somewhere where you, you know, you, if you have a phone, like, you can stop in the middle of whatever, if it's really an emergency, and deal with it.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, I'm pretty awesome. Lucky, I'm supported by T-Mobile. So John and the team at T-Mobile have really been great advocates for me, and have allowed me to, like, I was telling them, we just met with them like a week or so ago when we were out in Seattle and Alaska and Oregon. And I was in the middle of the Gobi Desert doing a 400 kilometer race, and was able to, you know, deal with things in the middle of a 5-day event, you know, on my iPhone, because of the ability to have service and to be able to, you know, connect. And, like, you know, obviously I was in pretty rough shape after running for that long, but still, if there's some way or somebody needs me, like, yeah, they can give me a call. And I've definitely taken calls in the middle of mountains and all the time running around the DC area.
Wow. Well, okay, we are getting really close to the finish here. And what is coming up for you in the near future, like the next year or so? And then my final question is a bucket list. What, you know, what's on your bucket list for the rest of your life, kind of thing?
Oh, yeah. So what coming up really quickly, I've got the Spartan Race World Championships at Lake Tahoe at the end of September. Then I have the Baltimore Marathon and the Marine Corps 50K. So that'll be really cool. It's an inaugural event coming up here in Washington, D.C. Then I'll be going to Hong Kong to run a half marathon. And I'm the virtual marathon ambassador for the New York City marathon. So that's the first week in November. I'll run a half marathon in Hong Kong and then add on another half marathon in Hong Kong to do my New York City virtual marathon, which is really cool. I love the idea of being able to kind of run these races anywhere you are around the world. And then hopefully the New York City Roadrunner 60 kilometer race in and then I'm maybe doing a Elvis world record attempt at the end of November, early December at the St. Jude Marathon. Then I'm kind of working on the rest of my schedule for 2020. But one of the big things I want to do is, this year I ran across Israel. That's something we didn't really touch on, but I set a fastest known time for running the Israeli National Trail. And I'd like to run across the United States. So that's a big goal of mine. So I'm hoping to do that in 2020, if not in 20. I don't know if I can still fit it in 2019, but definitely in 2020, it's something that I'd like to do if I can find the time and just make it work. So I'm trying to figure out how to do that. Yeah. And, you know, as we said, like, there's that balance aspect with, like, the family and work aspect. So that's a big goal. And then if I can do that, I'd like to try to, I think it'd be cool to kind of run across the U.S. and then row across the Atlantic and then run across all the 7 continents. And then one of my big dreams is to run in outer space. And so, like, that's kind of like either running on the moon or Mars or International Space Station. I think it'd be cooler to run across a planet, though. So maybe maybe.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well,
if you know anyone that can make that happen, or anyone that listens to your project has a, you know, a ear with Elon Musk or Richard Branson or anyone at NASA, that would be awesome.
We talk with many of our guests about how they deal with stress, challenges, anxiety, and more when it comes to not only training, but their lives, family, and work. That's why we're excited to announce today's sponsor, BetterHelp. BetterHelp provides licensed online professional counseling to help you deal with anxiety, depression, sleep issues, relationships, and more. Connecting with an online therapist has many advantages. First, it's a safe, confidential, and private environment, so it's easier to get started with subjects you may be embarrassed to talk about. Second, it's much easier to schedule because you don't have to spend the time driving to and from an office and waiting. Plus, you can have sessions in the evening when it may be more convenient. Sessions can be scheduled in four ways: phone, video, and even chat and text. Best of all, it's a truly affordable option, and financial aid may be an option. To make it a no-brainer, to give it a try, you can get 10% off your first month with the discount code RTTT. So why not get started today? Go to betterhelp.com/RTTT. Simply fill out a questionnaire to help them assess your needs and get matched with a counselor you'll love. That's betterhelp.com/RTTT. We are back with Run to the Top podcast with Michael Wardian, amazingly diverse runner, 2019 winner of the double San Francisco Marathon and the World Marathon, 7 marathons in 7 days on 7 continents. Michael, are you ready to head into the final kick?
I'm ready.
All right, let's do it. So first, is a favorite local run or outdoor location for working out in your neighborhood in the Arlington area of the U.S.?
Yeah, I think my favorite trail here in Arlington, Virginia is the Potomac Heritage Trail. It's a trail that you can get to pretty easily. You head to Theodore Roosevelt Island and you can take it anywhere. I think it goes out like 50 miles, but if you're wanting a technical, beautiful, diverse trail with like waterfalls and river views and some pretty gnarly technical terrain and some elevation, but also some kind of cruisy sections, then that's the one I'd highly recommend.
All right.
And if you want a road run, there's a thing in Arlington called the Arlington Loop, and that is around 16 miles or so. And you can kind of get to see all of Arlington. You get to see the airport, you get to see the river, you get views of the Washington Monument. And then you can kind of go through Arlington and see a bunch of the different neighborhoods.
Nice. Okay. Recommended book, research, or video that has influenced you in your running?
I'd say the book that has had one of the biggest impacts on me is Jack Daniel's Run Formula. That was for me probably the first book that actually gave me specific times and goals to hit in workouts, and then gave me a way to kind of track progress.
Yeah, that's an interesting book because it's been around forever, but it still seems to be one that a lot of people refer to.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, there's also like The Lore of Running, which is really interesting by Tim Noakes, but and I actually loved Arthur Lydiard's books too, but I'd say like that one is a little more touchy feely, and I really like the specific times that Jack Daniels gives you.
Good. I think with those books, it's also really beneficial to actually read or look through all of them because you get different perspectives from people who are very high up in the running community.
Agreed. Yeah. I mean, I think if you want to be part of the sport and kind of improve in your running, like it's good to see what, you know, other people have done in the past who have had success. And then I liked it when I was first getting into it, and still, I always am curious about like how other people have done it. And then, you know, how does that apply to me? And then experimentation, like, okay, like maybe that workout is something that, you know, I find success with, but, you know, this one, you know, not as much. And so like,
right. That's we're cool all experiments of one, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So contact information, Michael, how our listeners can stay in touch with you.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're, I'm really heavily involved in social media. So I'm on Instagram at Mike Wardian, and that's MikeWard, like dog, IAN, like Nancy. And I have the same handle on Twitter. And then on Facebook, I have an athlete page, and that's, Facebook/ Michael Wardian. And then I also have a website that, you know, I haven't really maintained as well, but it's www.mikewardian.com. And there's contact details there. If anyone wants to reach out to me at any of those places, that's great. I'm also on LinkedIn for my real job, and that's just Michael Wardian at LinkedIn. And trying to think, like, if there's anything else, you know, there's contact details with my email address and everything there for people to reach out.
Yeah. And there's a lot of information about you on the internet. I enjoyed looking through some of it and looked at your website, looked at some of the social media, read a couple of articles. So, you know, there's interviews, there's a lot of information on you, and you look like a pretty cool guy.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah. It's funny. Like, people will Google and they're like, oh, I didn't know you did all that stuff. If you just type my name into a search engine, you'll find some stuff.
So thanks so much for being with us today, Michael.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure. Look forward to talking to you guys again at some point, and thanks for all you do.
In 20 years, yeah, for sure. But maybe even before then, we can have another interview.
You've
been listening to Michael Wardian, a runner who has taken a very unique approach to running, and I'm sure we'll be hearing more of his stories and successes for years to come. So thank you, our audience, for joining us for today's podcast at Run to the Top. Follow us at the Runners Connect Winner Circle on Facebook by going to runnersconnect.net/FB. Please subscribe to Run to the Top podcast at runnersconnect.net or on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, etc. You'll be notified every week when the new episode is published. And thank you, each of you, for listening. We'll be back next week with another super interview to entertain, educate, and inspire you as you head out on your running workout. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, your host with Run to the Top, wishing you a great running week.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.